Today's episode of the Real Estate Podcast, amazing content from Tina Smith up in Oregon, one of our top agents up in Oregon. And stick around to the very end, because at the very end, the very last question, there's some amazing tips and tactics and insights that you'll want to listen to. Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining us today on the Real Estate Podcast. I'm Todd Sumney, the Chief Industry Officer for HomeSmart. And today I am so excited to have such an amazing HomeSmart real estate agent with all of you today. And we are going to talk about her story in real estate, how she built her business, and also about tactics that she used to grow her business, as well as what she's doing right now in 2024 in our unique market to grow her business. So you're going to walk away with some strategies and some tactics after today's episode. But without any further ado, please let me introduce Tina Smith from HomeSmart Realty Group up in Oregon. Tina, thank you for joining us today.
Hey, good to see you again, Todd.
You know, got to give a big shout out to your brokerage team as well, Mr. Jim Sparkman and Mark Farrow and the whole group up there at HomeSmart Realty Group, some of our favorite, most amazing brokers. And you guys are, you know, you're doing such a great job there up in Oregon, serving the community, growing like crazy. Give your team a big thank you for us for all they do.
Yeah, absolutely. I love all of them as well. It's a great place. It's my home.
Right. Well, at the very end, we're going to have to talk about why you joined HomeSmart Realty Group and what you love about that. But we'll save that for the very end. But let's dig in real quick and let's just talk about your real estate career. Let's hear your story. Like, how did you get started in real estate? And more importantly, like, how did you build your business? What were the first things that you did to build your business?
So I got into real estate. I was in banking for 12 plus years. And in customer service, lending, personal loans, home equity loans. And at the time, I had a lot of contacts. So that really helped as I transitioned into real estate. Word of mouth, it was a small community. So I was really fortunate that way. And my clients that I had worked with automatically had like referrals for me kind of right off the bat. So it was good that way. It was a nice transition.
Right. Well, and at the time, I know, you were, what year was that? You were filling a need, right? There was a need for like that you were filling going on in your local area.
Yeah, it was in 1998. Seems like
yesterday.
I know. Well, my brain still tries to go back to 98, and, you know, right. With the way we did, everything's changed so much. Yeah. So I want to serve my community in a different and possibly greater capacity.
Right. Right. Yeah. So one question I like to ask agents when they, you know, started out is, did you start with a database? And, you know, what did you do to over the years? With, we often talk about our sphere of influence and our, you know, people that we know and serve and help. And so, but you kind of have to have a system in place to organize them to know, well, who are first time home buyers, who are renters maybe that need help, who are some customers maybe that are looking for special unique properties like vineyards or something up there, or farms up in the, you know, Willamette Valley. Anyway, what'd you do with the database? Did you start with one?
I did. And, you know, back in the day, we call it our BOB, our book of business. Right. It was an actual physical database, a little bit different than today. So I did. I had a pretty good start since I knew a lot of people in the community. And so that's how I started. As far as my client base. So,
right.
Yeah.
Do you remember what your first transaction was?
I do. My first listing appointment for sure.
Okay. Let's hear about that.
You want to hear about that? Okay.
I do.
Yeah. It was, I really have a heart for seniors, first of all. And I got this floor call to go on a listing appointment. And this sweet lady, her husband had just passed away and her daughter was there with her. And went through all the things. I had my marketing plan and my folder and I was all good to go. Looked all professional and went in, sat down, and it was real quiet. The daughter was real quiet, which is great. She's observing, right? So I'm really connecting with her mom. Anyway, I thought I did a pretty good job, but then the daughter kicked in and, you know, we like to protect, you know, who we're having someone work for.
Sure.
So she just lit into me, ripped me apart. And I sat through it. I just kind of gathered my thoughts, kept my composure. And I said, you know, here, you know, if you have any more questions, let me know. I'll be here for you. I went out in my car and I cried. I don't like to admit that. I thought, did I leave banking for this?
Right.
But anyway, long story short, I got the phone call to list mom's house and she apologized profusely to me. And I, you know, and that was a good lesson too, because a lot of times we're in front of people and we're taking the brunt of, we don't know what else is going on in their lives. So it's not always personal, even though it's hard not to take it that way.
Right. Right.
So yeah, and we got it sold. It was a success.
One, that's a great story, you know, overcoming challenges on your very first, you know, listing appointment. What was it that she was kind of concerned about, or, you know, what did she voice? Like
the family member?
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, her mom was getting up there in years and we like, as far as taking care of seniors, you know, I feel like you really have to have, I don't want to say a special person because I don't like to say I'm special, but you want them to connect, right? And right. So, and she was very suspicious pretty much of everything and everyone. My guess was that, you know, they'd had a bad experience in the past. And I do believe that's what she had said. You know, other realtors have come, they're just after, you know, mom's money, sell the house, get on with it, whatever. And so that was kind of some of the things she voiced. I had been kind of the senior advocate at the bank. So, but you know, she didn't know that. You know, I have a real heart for senior citizens.
That's great. Well, you know, we talk all the time on this podcast about that this industry, our profession, is about serving customers and helping them. It's not about sales. It's really not. And it's, you know, it's really about helping them meet their real estate goals, helping them with a need. Yep. There are divorces, there are deaths, there's debt situations, there's, you know, job moves, there's family growing, there's, you know, all kinds of things that we help them with. So the interesting thing is that I'm going to ask you about, like, you know, the experience later after you completed the transaction with that customer. Sometimes the people that maybe we have the biggest hurdles to overcome, you know, they become some of our most loyal fans afterwards. Yeah. So at the beginning, I mean, you talked about you're leaving and going to your car and breaking down because you're like, oh, I'm never going to get that transaction. She laid into me. She really, you know, you felt like it went terrible. And then you get the listing, you sell, you help. Yeah. Did she turn out to be a big fan of yours by the time it was done?
She did. Her and her daughter both. She ended up buying a new construction in a little subdivision there. Right. And as it was under contract, I would drive her up to Salem. I remember, you know, helping her pick out her countertops, whatever. I'd take her out to lunch. And her daughter was working, so I was super grateful that I was able to do that. It ended up being...
So it turned into two transactions because not only you sold the one home, then you helped her buy a new home.
Go figure.
Help her do all that. Okay, great.
Yeah.
Keep going. Keep going. So you took her and showed her countertops and cabinets and all that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So she ended up closing on her new home. Everybody was happy. I mean, really and truly, everybody was happy. So it was a win-win.
Love
it
that.
It really was.
Love that. So, okay. So really, that's kind of two transactions pretty quickly after getting your license. One of the biggest questions that I get from agents, and they often ask me, hey, can you dig into in the podcast a little bit? You know, I'm a new agent. I'm new to the industry. I have experience. I'm professional. I have, many times they're coming from some other career and, they're now moving into real estate. They have a heart for serving customers, et cetera. But they're saying is, how do you dig up those first couple transactions? How do you get buyers to want to work with you? How do you get sellers to want to work with you? So I guess I'm asking, what did you do in the early days, in the early days to grow your business when you had no transactions? Then you got those first two.
Sure.
And what did you do to get more? Like, how did you grow your business?
Well, first of all, I did a lot of networking, which is important, getting your face out there. I joined a chamber group, met once a week. I observed a lot in the office. I would come in, observe other agents. I did a lot of floor time, made a lot of phone calls. I sent letters. So, back in the day, computers,
right.
I think only like three people in our office had a computer, and we had the MLS books that were, 6 inches high, no Google. So I made phone calls, sent cards and letters introducing myself. Hey, you may know me from here. I've transitioned into real estate. I'm working here. Let me know if I can serve you, type of thing. And just kind of what we call now getting back to the basics.
Right. Love that. Okay. So, fast forward to, the book, the real estate book goes away. It moves into the MLS. The computers come around. We start to have CRMs like Top Producer or, and then now to today, we have like Wise Agent. We have Core Exact Contact, Chime, all these different CRMs. In the meantime, we also had Excel, we had computers, laptops, certain things that happened along the way. So how did you convert from a Rolodex to an electronic database, and how did that grow over the years?
Well, at first, like anything, change, it was like, oh, but you just have to dive into it. And I had gotten a computer at home, so you did a lot of practicing.
Right.
And it really wasn't too bad. I did, it's just learning something new constantly and not quitting, watching other people, asking questions, how did they do it?
Right.
That was really, really helpful.
So what are you using today?
I'd been using with KV Core, and that was okay. And then switched to Chime.
Okay. All right.
And honestly, I keep it in a Word document too. So I just keep all my contacts, and I add to them. And
well, then you've got your Christmas card list, and you've got your mailing lists and labels and all those different kinds of things as well. So you do have an extensive list. Do you have them organized into groups? How do you know, and do you market to different groups, or are you individually marketing to every customer one-on-one?
I do a little both, actually. It kind of depends. So I do keep in touch with all of them. I try to send out a couple of handwritten cards or do texts consistently on a daily basis. If I've got a group of first-time home buyers, I may, market to them specifically. Letters, call, social media is great. I mean, a lot of people, that's a real good one.
Right.
Some, senior citizens, if they're, if I know they're, maybe transitioning or, just checking in with them too. It's not always salesy.
Right. Well, I know that your brokerage in Oregon does an awful lot with new home builds. I mean, when I walked into your lobby, there were 24 different home builder logos up on the wall.
I know.
And your brokerage does a great job representing buyers because, and a lot of times I think buyers don't, they'll walk in maybe to a, builder on site or something. And I guess, some buyers realize they need buyer representation. I think every buyer should have buyer representation separate.
Absolutely, 100%.
Right. Can you talk about that a little bit and how you work with customers working with new home builders?
Well, I kind of explain, kind of meet with the builders, sit them down, have maybe a joint meeting. They're usually represented by an agent, kind of get familiar, let them know, here's the paperwork. Also, show them it's a lot of paperwork. Oftentimes builders have different paperwork, kind of getting them familiar with what they're going to be looking at so that it's not so overwhelming in one shot. And then just, guiding a lot of conversation, a lot of going to, the site, kind of like what we're doing right now, personally. So it's there's a lot of moving parts and pieces and just kind of like a lot of handholding sometimes.
Okay, so before we move into like we're, at the beginning of 2024 and talking about what we're doing going forward, let's still, what is one thing you wish someone would have told you way back on early in your career? What are some lessons learned that other agents may
Well,
want to learn from you, from your experience, learn from mistakes?
never think you're gonna know everything. Never. After 26 years, I mean, I feel like right now, especially the playing field is pretty much leveled with everything that's going on. And don't be afraid to ask questions. It's just something, and you could ask James Montgomery, our principal broker. James, you know how I like to overthink everything. Don't be afraid to ask questions. You have and just make others feel comfortable, be real. Be genuine, be true to yourself, and you'll connect with these people. It's about the relationship and not really, like you were saying earlier, the sale. And so that mindset really, really helped me as far as, you start out and it's sale, sale, sale. No, it's really not about that. It's about the relationship.
So never stop learning, never assume that or understand that you don't know everything and that that's okay and that you're going to keep learning. What else? What other things maybe were did you learn along the way?
Did I learn along the way? I would say, for one example, one brokerage that I worked at, I like to dress in my suits and heels. That's what I was used to at the bank. So I moved over to the coast. And I got a lot of flack how I dressed. You cannot sell real estate looking like that, Tina.
The coast of
And
Oregon, which is beautiful. They
it is
have like
beautiful.
beach towns and the whole, thing, right? Is that where you moved? We're at? Okay.
But
All right.
that's where I was at before I moved over to HomeSmart Realty Group. And so I learned, if you want to, you kind of want to make people feel comfortable. If they can relate to you, then they will like you better and want to use you. So I kind of toned it down a bit and ended up doing very well.
That's great. But at the same token, you have to stay yourself though too, because if you change too much because of what other people in the office are saying, that's not authentic and that's not real and that's not comfortable for the customers either. So,
Yeah, and I'm not a real casual person, so that's just how I am. But I learned how to adjust to the environment, and it is a totally different environment there, and the elements, the wind, the rain, it doesn't come down, it goes sideways. So you just have to be prepared for
Awesome. Okay,
the
so
elements.
Never stop learning, you know, always be ask questions.
Yes.
You know, the be yourself, be authentic, mm-hmm. you know, but make people feel comfortable, connect with them.
Yeah,
what's a third thing maybe that attribute some of your success to, or
listening?
Okay.
Listening is very important. A lot of times, you will find that there's a lot more to a person if you just listen to them, and they want to be heard,
right.
And that really helps that connection.
Right.
And I, you know, I write things down. So, right. You know, and people like that. If you're taking notes about what they're saying, right. I mean, you know, and that you're really interested, you're not just, you know, I think that's important. So yeah, you know, just listening, paying attention, being, detailed,
right?
Never stop learning. And you know what? Also, don't be too hard on yourself. You know, give yourself a little grace.
Perfect.
Yeah. We all need it.
All right. So let's dig into a couple tactics. Open house marketing. Do you do open houses? Have you done open houses? What make your open houses successful?
You know, social media is great, obviously. And I've had pretty good luck with that. I actually did a video yesterday for someone holding my own home open. And videos, you know, I don't like talking about myself or showing my face, so it's not my comfort zone, but I did it.
Right.
And, you know, texting people, I texted all my neighbors, people in the neighborhood, go around to the neighbors where the home is being held open. Sometimes I go door to door and say, hey, you know, this house is open Saturday. Hope you come on by.
Right.
And that sort of thing. Yeah. And advertising it to, you know, on the Facebook groups, and, you know, at HomeSmart, we have our group page. So.
Right. So when you did the video, what video did you use? Video software? Did you just use your phone? How did you create your video?
I did my phone. Yeah. And just kind of on the spur of the moment, on the fly. And a couple people said, that was really good. If I plan something, I feel like it's, I don't know, people like the candid, I guess, right. Is what I'll say. Yeah.
Right.
So, yeah, just kind of on the fly with my phone, and yeah, it worked out.
Okay. All right. Great. Social media, tell people how they can find you on social media so they can follow you. You know, one of the things I talk about a lot is that there's, in real estate, we are a collaborative industry. We learn from each other all the time. And some of my best ideas have, you know, that I've shared with agents have come from watching other agents and seeing what works for them.
Yeah.
So I was doing a seminar one time with a top agent who does a lot of social media. And she said, mm-hmm. You know what? I pinpoint and get connected with agents all around the country. Mm-hmm. And I watch what they do. And then I do it in my local area because they're somewhere else. And when they have a great idea, you know, I do that. So tell people how they can find you. And then let's talk a little bit about what you do on social media.
Sure. Tina Smith at HomeSmart Realty Group on Facebook. I have a website, valleytoviewproperties.com. Okay. And the word two is spelled out. It's not the number two, valleytoviewproperties.
Okay.
Instagram, Tina_Smith_realtor.
Okay.
So those are a couple of good ways to get a hold of me. Text, phone calls, 541-992-5460.
Okay.
And I'm very responsive to my phone calls. And that's another thing we've got. We're in that time of life where everybody wants it right now. It's instant. So it's real important to be really responsive in a good time frame.
Mm-hmm. Right. So what are you doing on your social media, or what type of content do you post? How often?
So I have this thing in my mind, Marketing Monday. So that kind of gears me up toward, it's a good idea. Let's do something social on social media today. And I don't just do it once a week. But at least if I have in my mind that it's Marketing Monday, let's do a market update. I do those weekly, monthly, you know, the title companies send out reports. You can look on the MLS. Sometimes lender updates. And a lot of times non-salesy, if there's events in the community, you know, people just don't want to hear about sales all the time. Right. So, and they want to connect and know about me. So everybody knows I love my dog. I have a rescue chihuahua.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
And, you know, that we're building on our vineyard, you know, and if they have questions about what to do, how to start that, feel free to ask. But right. They like to have that connection. I'm a real person, kind of like them.
Right.
So, yeah.
Love that. Okay. So buyers right now in 2024, 2023, you know, interest rates, home prices going up, inventory down.
Yeah.
You know, what are you doing to work with buyers right now, and how are you helping them? And can you tell a story maybe about a recent buyer that you helped navigate, you know, this market?
I would love to. Yeah. That, and I'm glad you asked that. Right now, actually, my business partner at HomeSmart, Peter Alotta, he and I are actually planning a first-time homebuyer seminar for in the next couple of months.
Love that.
Yeah. So a lender reached out to us. We're meeting on that next week. So that's in the works.
Right.
So
first-time homebuyer programs, down payment assistance programs.
Mm-hmm.
There's some amazing programs right now. There's like 3,800 down payment assistance programs and first-time homebuyer programs.
Yeah.
I'd probably say 60% of them are first-time homebuyer, but 40%, you don't have to be a first-time homebuyer. But, you know, so are those some of the things you're working on with your lender and going to help educate the consumer on? Okay.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I had a potential buyer reach out to me last week. Do I have to have 20% down? I said, good news. No, you don't. Right. So, you know, that's kind of a misnomer out there and people have that in their mind. So, you know, this is one way we can help them get the information. Right. I am also, I reach out to, and I don't like to use the word past client because I feel like they're still clients.
They're everybody's, they're lifelong clients. Right?
Exactly. So I think getting out of that mindset is like, they're still clients. They can still refer to you. They could come back to you.
Right.
So, I make a few calls a week. I've got a lunch set up with one of the clients that I'll tell you about in the story. We're doing lunch next week. Just to check in and see how life is going. And then she wants me to look at her house, see what she's done. Keeping in contact with them. And I'm also getting my SRES right now. I started on that.
Okay.
That's senior real estate specialist.
Right.
As you know. So just got some things in the works to kind of educate and help these people.
Well, let's dig into that story. Tell us a story about how you've helped a homebuyer recently, you know, navigate these challenges, right?
Yeah. This is such a good story. So I'll go back a little bit when I worked over at the Coast, and this is why it's also really important to keep those contacts going. If you relocate from an area, keep in touch with them. They're a really good referral source. So one of them referred a client to me who has some folks in California.
Right.
And they wanted to move up to be close to their kids and grandkids. Well, it wasn't just that. They wanted to be within 2 to 3 blocks of their grandkids. This was a dream. So, this took a minute, but we did it. So, and this is the lady. She loves being near her granddaughters. We're going out to lunch next week. We still keep in touch. So then the other set of grandparents who also lived in California, they wanted to come up and be within 2 to 3 blocks of the grandchildren. So a fast forward, they are so happy. We did this last year. We got the last grandparent up here. And they are thrilled. They are literally within 3 blocks. One of them's 2 blocks, one of them's three. Who couldn't be happier?
That's awesome. So
I love that.
both sets of grandparents within blocks of the family. So that's great.
Yeah,
So
well, yeah.
what are some of the challenges though that they had to overcoming? I mean, one challenge is obviously finding the homes in those neighborhoods. Did you farm it and put it out and say, look, I've got a buyer who wants to buy in this neighborhood to be close to everybody, to their family. And so did you like contact each one of those homeowners individually and just say, if you're thinking about selling, we've got somebody that wants to buy. How did you do that? How did you make it happen? Because
Well, persistence, I'll tell you what. But I actually did, after I had showed one of the homes that ended up not being the one, I did check in with a couple of the neighbors. So, and kind of get the word out. I hit the MLS like every day, as did they. You know, buyers, they look. And just being available pretty much all the time to get them what they wanted. So, you have some fall through, whether it's home inspections, yada yada. And I thought at one point, I don't know how I'm going to get them to their goal. But that was just my brain thinking, because it was a big task getting all these people within 3 blocks in a certain neighborhood. But persistence and patience.
And that's what I'm saying, because like a lot of times, I mean, in neighborhoods, don't homes don't, my neighborhood, homes don't go up for sale that often. And to be able to try to find three in the same neighborhood, it seems like, I mean, so was it just luck they happened to come on, or did the homes that they purchased actually come because you had put the word out, somebody wants to buy in this neighborhood?
They actually came on the market, which was I kind of rare. In fact, I was very surprised at a couple of them. But it was, and these were also during the feeding frenzy, some of these. So it was not just, okay, here's one. Just come on. Well, then you've got seven other buyers. We made it work. I think just knowing how to represent your client, how to communicate with the other agent, and without doing the love letters and all of that, it's just really and truly a lot of communication and persistence. And I think, I don't know if it was luck. I always tell them, you've got a praying realtor. Can't hurt.
I love that. All right, that's awesome. So, okay, so you obviously you made that happen, for them. What do you do afterwards? Like, is there any referral follow-up or anything like that where, now those people are referring you out? Like, how do you cultivate your referrals on a situation like that?
Yeah, so I obviously keep in touch with them during the holidays. I'll take them a bottle of wine or whatever they like to drink. Say hello, take them a pie, what have you. I've actually gotten a referral from the person that originally set me up with his parents and finding homes. There was they own a medical practice here in town, and so they had a new physician transferring from another part of the United States. Anyway, referred to me, closed on an $800,000 sale, and made some new friends. And it's word of mouth. I mean, that one referral from the beach, where I had left on good terms, resulted in three really good sales.
Either staying in touch with your past, sphere, and it's like they're clients for life, so stay in touch with them.
Absolutely.
That's great. Okay, so you and your husband, you purchased a winery. Now, purchasing a specialty real estate property, there's often, I mean, there's some unique characteristics like, farms or acreage or some other things. Can you share with the audience what you learned in trying to navigate a specialty type real estate property, right?
Yeah, I learned that we might be crazy.
Right.
Okay. So we actually bought a parcel of property that was zoned special ag, which, and basically it was non-buildable, 35 acres. It was, I'll have to show you the photo sometime. It was looked like a wheat field.
Okay.
With a lot of rocks. We're still finding stumps. It was an old Christmas tree farm. So we knew it wasn't buildable. So, you know, your due diligence looks a little different on something like that. I mean, we knew what we were getting into. I don't think we realized what a big project it could be, although we're fairly realistic.
But did you buy it with the intent of trying to turn it into a winery, or excuse me, a vineyard?
Uh-huh.
And knowing that you would have to not only do a lot of work, but zoning, et cetera, that it might not work out, right?
Yes, it was definitely a risk. We wanted to build our dream home, right? And we wanted to build it on a vineyard. Okay. So, and we thought about, you know, what to plant. Well, anyway, so part of the due diligence, you've got your soil studies, you know, and that's, you know, I've learned a lot. I still don't know anything, but I've learned a lot. You've got your terroir, you know, is it what's going to grow best on this slope? What's going to grow best here? You bring the experts in, and you just learn, you know, we thought, do we plant hazelnuts, Christmas trees? So we planted a vineyard, and that was in, let's see, we bought the property in 2016.
So did you have to get permission? You had to get zoning, get it rezoned? Did you have to get it rezoned to build on it? You did?
Yes.
Okay. Then you have to get it rezoned to, based on what you were going to grow. Like if you wanted to grow pecan trees or, you know, some other, you know, Christmas trees again, or, you know, or did you want, you know, vineyard? Did you have to get it rezoned for that?
We actually didn't have to get it rezoned for that. With the current zoning that it was, we were allowed to farm. In fact, that was the only thing we could do with that property.
Okay, but you couldn't build on it. You had to get it zoned so you could build on it. Okay.
After, gosh, it was like 8 years, we finally qualified with our crop volume for a building permit. And so we started building in June. And
So it took you how many years?
Yeah, so eight.
Eight, okay. All right, so then now, you know, this kind of creates an opportunity for you.
Yeah.
In your local area, like helping others, have you had any other people who have seen what you've done, who maybe they want to explore doing that? Are you creating a little niche for yourself with specialty properties, or could you?
I think so. And I've shown vineyard properties before. And I do get a lot of questions from other agents wanting to know, you know, what's the first thing I need to do here? What do I need to tell my buyers? What do I need to advise them? But so it is a specialty for sure. I can see, you know, I mean, I love it. So, you know, I'm hoping this is the only one we've purchased, and that I've sold. Like I said, I've shown them. The opportunities come up occasionally, and I'd be excited to do it again.
Awesome. Well, you sent me pictures and it's beautiful. So, all right. So I have an idea. Audience, you're the first, you know, to hear this. Okay. So I have an idea. One day we were at a wine tasting. My wife used to be in the wine business down here in Arizona. But we were talking about how, you know, they have golf course communities. Why don't they have a vineyard community? Why don't they have a vineyard with 6 or 7 or 10 homes around it, like a golf course community, and do a central wine tasting room and a fireplace and, you know, something. All right. So I'll be your first customer. You can find that land and put it together. See, it looked at new. I raised my hand on Zoom. So,
yeah. You know, and we may someday do like an Airbnb on our property.
Right.
We've had, you know, people ask us if we could do, you know, weddings. So, you know, there's more opportunity there. There's a lot we're doing once we get this house done, and we can breathe.
Okay.
Then, yeah, so we'll, but I love your idea.
All right. Well,
that's amazing. Hey,
count me in for one of the parcels. You call
yes.
me when you're ready. You find
yeah.
that piece of land. Work with Mark to make that happen. So that's
mm-hmm.
awesome. All right. Love that. Okay. So do you have a favorite book or a podcast that has impacted you and your success
yeah.
in real estate?
You know, I've recently started listening to Brian Buffini's It's a Good Life
uh-huh.
podcast. It's good.
It's great.
It's cool. It's real talk,
mm-hmm.
but it's not all doom and gloom.
Right.
And I could listen to him all day long anyway.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, and then, you know, I've got my inspirational podcast, Rick Warren.
Okay. Great.
But I really love that Brian Buffini podcast that I've been listening to. So I'll continue with that. And on the other end of the spectrum, because you know, I go from one to the other. It's Hallmark movies or crime. you know, it's, my husband says, should I be worried? No, you're fine. Crime and Cookie Juice. It actually, and it can teach about, you know, mitigation and, you know, avoiding it. So it's pretty good. Yeah.
That's great. Okay.
It's hosted by a former criminal defense attorney
right.
and a former private detective. It's quite interesting.
Okay, so you have some amazing brokerage leaders, Jim
yes.
Sparkman, Mark Farrow,
yeah.
You know, Jim's wife, the leadership team, the brokerage team that's,
mm-hmm.
you know, in the, you really have an amazing group up there in Oregon. Can
For
you
sure.
tell just a couple things that they have taught you, maybe even in a mentor type role or something where, you know, how have they impacted you? Maybe one or two principles that they've taught you or that you've learned along the way with your group there.
Yeah. I mean, these people are, I can't describe it enough. They're my friends too.
Right.
James Sparkman, Mark Farrow, Kristen Sparkman, James, James Montgomery, our principal broker, all the office staff. And I work with a lot of smart people. I mean, these are quality, these other agents, amazing. I learned from them too. But what I really appreciate about them, besides the professionalism, the culture, the charity, the giving back, I love that. And so that's inspired me to do more as well. And I've appreciated that, you know, and they know how to have fun and it's okay to have fun, you know, so we can have fun. But as far as the charity, Kristen, you know, she makes me a better person, really and truly. I've started volunteering more at like the mission, the homeless shelter,
right.
And that's really been a blessing to me. I get more out of it than the ones we serve. I enjoy it. And these are people. These are real people with, you know, the need to want to communicate.
I would say that is one thing I admire very much about your leadership team, as well
yes.
as all of your agents. Your entire brokerage is very community driven and serving the community.
Yes.
And doing it from the heart of
absolutely
just serving, expecting nothing in return. And then I, you know, I can see how in a way it impacts you all, you know,
yeah.
as much as the people that you're actually serving and benefiting. So good job. Kudos with
yeah.
that. Keep doing that. Tell the team up there to keep it up. Appreciate them. Thanks for
amazing.
Representing, you know, us because, you know, we do. HomeSmart yeah. wants to serve all of our different communities. So,
yeah, I love
all right,
that.
So now if you were to put your minds in that or your imagine for a minute one of your customers describing you and referring you to another customer. I would hate it if somebody asked me this question, but I'm going to ask you anyway. What do you think customers how would they describe you, or how do you, more importantly, how do you want to be described?
Well, I would hope, and I have heard it. You know, I love talking about myself, says no one ever, that I'm dependable, reliable, a good communicator, and that I care. And I really think that is something that really comes across. Sometimes, you know, I like to add humor to things, and that can help. But, you know, people can tell if you're doing something just for the paycheck rather than, you know, being actually concerned or just genuinely caring. And I really hope that that's how they would see me.
Gotcha. Love that answer. All right. Last one. What are you looking forward to in 2024? This is the last question.
Okay.
What are you going to do in the next 3 months to grow your business? What is your strategy?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm looking forward to the Home Smart Summit for one thing. That is very inspiring. I'm excited about that. What is it just coming up?
Can't wait to see you there. So it's up in Las Vegas. We're going to be there. Yep.
That will be a good time learning, and just getting rejuvenated, because you have to, we can get wore down pretty easy. So you've got, you know, to stay rejuvenated. That's one thing. And like I said, the first time home buyer seminar, I'm going to rejoin the ladies golf group here at a local golf club that, you know, good networking. I may have to take lessons again when the weather is not really conducive around here to doing that all year long. So let's see what else. Making those calls every week, sending cards. One thing that I do back to the basics, people love, I send note cards. If I have a transaction with a realtor, or maybe the title company rep did a great job, or even if they didn't, to be honest, I like to thank them for their work, and buyers, brokers. So I will send out handwritten cards, you know, thank you for the work you put into this. And especially buyers agents, they work so hard. Right. And I thank them. I just want to be thankful even more so going forward, and letting people know how much they are appreciated.
Right.
This job is hard enough.
Yeah.
So,
well, and you just emphasized, you said, especially buyers agents, you know, one thing that, mm-hmm. I've had some discussions with agents lately, and I've been asking them, you know, who, you know, why did you emphasize it like that? You know?
Yeah. Well, right now, especially, it's tough. And, you know, I've been a buyer's agent plenty of times. It's a long process.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's exhausting, not just a long process. It's exhausting.
Yeah. And that's why I guess I didn't want to put words in your mouth, but when I was saying, you know, talking to some groups lately, I'll ask the question, who do we typically work more hours for, the buyer or the seller? Mm-hmm. And almost always it's the buyer.
Yeah.
The buyer represented, because there's more work that goes into that type of a transaction. And I think that one thing that I'm looking forward to working with all the Home Smart agents is communicating more next year of what we do for buyers and how we can help them, because they do have challenges right now.
Yes.
And especially those that are renting and don't own right now.
Right.
And I have a heavy heart for that. And so
I want to
communicate better what we do, how we help them. And, you know, so some of the things that we do, sometimes we'll work hours on a report or hours searching for property.
Mm-hmm.
I think we should be communicating that to our sphere to know that that's part of what we do. We'll work these hours for you.
Yep.
We will help you and help you navigate the waters. So kudos to you for that. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Great job. Mm-hmm. Thank you for joining us here, you know, today on the podcast. It's great. Everyone, I hope you've enjoyed our time here with Tina Smith, Home Smart Realty Group, up in the Willamette Valley area of Oregon, which is Salem. Is it Tulalip? Is that how you say it?
Tulalip.
Tualatin, okay, all right.
Salem, Albany, Portland.
And the actual city that like is your main service area, how would you describe it? Is it Salem?
Salem and the surrounding, Albany, Dallas, or some little, on
Gotcha.
the outskirts.
Great. All right. And then come to Las Vegas, meet Tina in person, and just thank you all, for joining us here today. So Tina, any parting thoughts for the agents? Agents want to learn from you. Anything we haven't covered.
I would say two, maybe three things. Embrace change. It's the one thing that's always going to be. And I don't say it because it's easy for me. It's just we don't embrace it. It's here to stay. And don't take rejection always as rejection. It can be a learning experience, or maybe it isn't really a rejection, like the story I told earlier. Did I feel rejected? I did. But it wasn't a rejection. It wasn't even about me. So it's not always about us. It's about them. And so getting into that mindset, I really feel like it helps. And with other agents, especially, there's newer agents out there, there's seasoned agents, there's agents in between. Sometimes we get, as listing agents, we might get an offer, or as a buyer's agent, we might be working with someone and we're like, oh, where did they get their real estate license? Sometimes it's just they need a little coaching. They might not have had great mentorship. So just offering grace and being patient and not letting those frustrations filter through to our clients, because they feel it. If we start butting heads with the other side, then it filters onto them and it's not going to be a win-win. So keep the focus, keep the goal.
Powerful nuggets right there at the end of the podcast, Tina. Thank you. Those were awesome.
Thank you.
I appreciate you so much. Admire what you're doing from afar.
Thank you.
Tina, by the way, came down here and visited us at our corporate headquarters, did a tour one day. All of you are welcome to do that. Just let us know when you're coming in town. Come see us, and we'd love to show you around. We appreciate all of you, appreciate all you're doing. Please keep serving buyers, keep serving sellers, helping them buy and sell. Right now, we have a 6.5 million unit housing shortage. People need help. So I thank you in advance for helping all of them find homes. So without any further ado, thank you for joining us today on today's Real Estate Podcast. I'm Todd Sumney. I was here with Tina Smith, and we look forward to seeing you back on future episodes. Thank you, Tina.
Like what you're hearing on The Real Estate? Tell your friends about us. Tell them to check out all of our episodes on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, and Spotify. And don't forget to send any topics you want us to tackle to therealestate@homesmart.com.